fighters to fight the Palestinians. It was Palestinian-Palestinian violence on behalf of the Israelis. They cleared out Jenin and Nablus to a certain extent. They displaced people. They continued to take over land. They continued to issue bills and annex more land. And at the end of the day, we are now at a place where the Americans have already said since day one that they're giving a green light to the Israelis to take over, that the Israelis have cleared most of the resistance pockets that would form a concern to them before October 7. Now they have cleared those. Jenin and Nablus, the best places to fight the Israeli occupation, are now either cleared from the resistance or the resistance has been weakened significantly. And the Israelis have created more checkpoints, and now they're taking over also places from the basically east of Jerusalem, as the esteemed Dr. Ali said during this interview. So when you look at the whole situation, what I see is basically the Israelis just cementing their annexation of the West Bank on the ground by deleting or eliminating the pockets of resistance in the West Bank.
Very interesting. And Ali, another simultaneous campaign that's taking place, you very well know, is the strategically positioned settlements that are popping up everywhere to disconnect Palestinian communities from one another in the occupied West Bank, consequently further restricting Palestinian movement and opportunity. So how calculated do you feel Israel's campaign against Palestinians there in occupied territories is? And the same question also that I put to Leila, how elaborate and planned out do you think, when do you think this was actually put into motion, this annexation campaign?
Let's see what happened since Oslo Accord up to now. Mm. They divided West Bank into Block A, B, and C. And up to now, we see that the authority leader, Mahmoud Abbas, is only, maybe can govern only Ramallah. Maybe, not sure yet. But we can see that Block A, Block B, already been destroyed, dismantled, disengaged, and we see that the Block C is totally under the Israeli authority and under occupation. Only about a couple months ago, Israel declared that 240,000 square meters were annexed from West Bank as just for new settlements. So what we are talking about, West Bank is the grand prize. Not only West Bank. We have to relate this or connect what's going on West Bank exactly for what's going on with the Abraham Accord. Abraham Accord is related to Abraham Road, Nation, also a book, and era, and also era. So this, what's going on is now we are talking about West Bank, but West Bank is just a start. They consider also Haramun Mountain as very sacred. They consider all over the, after they annex West Bank, and I think it's matters of few days now, then they will go into annexing South Syria also.
And that is an interesting point. That wasn't actually part of my questions, but now that you mentioned it, Ali, I'd like to put that to the Abraham Accords, Leila. The fact that we see at times unprecedented settlement expansion, all this talk of West Bank, Jordan Valley, East Al-Quds, annexation, and yet we see Arab leaders and Arab states normalizing. How toxic is that for the Palestinian cause when they see what's happening and Palestinians are on the verge and brink of losing all of Palestine and they continue to join these efforts by the U.S. to normalize with Tel Aviv?
Well, I don't know what those Arab nations that have naturalized ties with the Israelis are on. But it's definitely, it must be a really strong substance. I mean, or basically they are all hypnotized, I don't know, because they don't see it coming further towards them. This is one step further towards what the Israelis are planning for the next decade to come, which is basically the Greater Israel Project. And that includes parts of Saudi Arabia, parts of Kuwait, parts of Iraq, parts of Egypt, all of Jordan, most of Syria, all of Lebanon. So if you look at the whole situation, The Israeli occupation is not going to stop at Mount Hermon, which is between Lebanon and Syria. It's not going to stop at the West Bank alone. It's going to engulf other places. And perhaps that's why Jordan, at one point during the beginning of this war, basically it created field hospitals inside the West Bank. So if something happens, because they expect things to happen over there, the Israelis will try to expel the Palestinians towards from the West Bank towards Jordan. So the Jordanians, well, basically they established those field hospitals to cater to the Palestinians who would be injured on the ground over there, and take it as an excuse to actually continue to have the Palestinians in the West Bank rather than being pushed towards Jordan. This is one step that the Jordanians took, and nobody looked at it, but from a military perspective, this is how it starts. They had basically the field hospital in Gaza, if you remember, in Tal el-Hawa, that's southwest of the northern part of the Gaza Strip, and under that guise, the Jordanians started doing the airdrops to send basically medical aid to their hospital over there. So they did the same thing for the West Bank, because they knew that things are going to get worse, and the worst is yet to come, because the moment the Israelis move over to take most of the West Bank and expel people from there, that's when basically you see more violence happening on the ground. And based on that violence, the Israelis basically will be kicking out the Palestinians, just like they did in 2000, 2001. Under the excuse of the Second Intifada, the Israelis basically send their army over there. Those who haven't been following up on the events that are happening, the Abrahamic Accords are just basically a mere, theatrics. Those governments have been in league with the Israelis and in bed with the Israelis for decades under the table. They've been doing trade with Israelis directly and indirectly. All they had to sign basically was a paper to legitimize the presence of the Israelis in the mindset of the international community. But so long that there's resistance, there will be no legitimacy for the occupation.
Thank you, Leila. And Ali, we have to ask who floated the idea of this bill. It was brought forth last year by Israel's far-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, who also lives in an Israeli settlement, and all settlements, for our viewers that should know, are illegal under international law, each and every settlement. This man belongs in one. He lives in one. He has a position in Israel's Ministry of a so-called Defense, where he oversees the administration of occupied West Bank and all of its settlements. A man who says there is no Palestinian identity or people, that Gaza should be destroyed, he said at one point. He also said the starving all Gazans is totally justified. A man, by many of our standards, Ali, belongs either in prison or an insane asylum, yet rather he is celebrated by Israelis as a leader. Ali, you don't hear other Israelis condemn him too much, do you? How concerning is that?
They will not. This is in their doctrine. This is in their belief. This is in their visions. They see that all the countries around should be living in, in autonomy, not in as a full independent states. We see that they called al-Julani as leader of Syria. They called Mahmoud Abbas as the authority leader. They don't call them a president. Later on, they will call also Jordanian king as the autonomy of Jordan as a part of the Abraham Accord or Abraham era. What's going on that they consider in their doctrine whenever they touch their feet will touch any land, it will be belonging to them. So in their doctrine, that it's in the Torah verses, they said that any occupied land that we spend or we shed blood for it to gain it, it should be our land. So in this case, let's see, they are trying to change the geography now. They stole the economy, they stole the history, they stole the prosperities, and now they are trying to steal the geography. And that's what exactly Thomas Barak, the envoy, said yesterday or day before at a Lebanese television. They said, in case Israel or anybody wants to build securities, he should first build the geography. And he's saying, he's mentioning that in order Israel to have full security, the geography should be changing. So this is exactly what's going on. They don't see the West Bank, and especially when you read their vision, and according to their 2030 vision, which is an American pro-Israeli vision, they said all those countries, the surrounding countries around Israel, as they said, should be dominated by Israel, and they will declare the Middle East Economic Union. That's their goal, and this is prepaid by the normalization states in the Gulf, and they are paid through killing and the massacres and the slaughters, houses they built in Gaza against the Palestinians. The corridors, we all know about Philadelphia, we all know about Morag or about Maganoz. They are trying to destroy, demolish, and kill, massacre, slaughter the Palestinian in order to pass their new map into the Middle East.
And thank you, Ali. Some very interesting points there. And Leila, I'd like you to speak on it too. The Smotriches, the Ben-Gurions, they've been part of this cabinet, Netanyahu's cabinet, since January of 2023. And then this provocative bill that Smotrich pushes, it gets this cross-party support, which tells us perhaps quite a bit about the collective mindset, because these are two names that have been very provocative with their rhetoric, with their policies. They get a little backlash for it, but then you notice their peers seem to have absolutely no problem with what they say and do. What does that tell us? They're the two names we hear, and it would be almost a mistake to assume that the rest of them are any more liberal or less harsh and to the right, because like I said, telling Ali, no one condemns a word these two say or do, or a thing they do.
Yeah, of course, you're 100% on this matter. I mean, if you look at the whole situation, they all live in illegal settlements, the whole of Palestine is illegally occupied, but at the end of the day, when it comes to the West Bank, they live in illegal settlements, installing Palestinian homes, on stolen Palestinian lands, killing Palestinians, calling for the killing of Palestinians, or expelling them. The funny part is that Smotrich says basically that there's nothing called Palestine or Palestinians, but there's a very famous interview with Golda Meir, one of the main prime ministers of the Israeli entity and the forefathers of the, she's not a man for me, like she speaks like a, she's not a woman, she speaks like a man. So she's one of the forefathers of the Israeli entity. She said, I am Palestinian, and Palestine is the West Bank and the East Bank as well. So she confessed that there's Palestine, but they try to falsify history. So every single time they move into a different era, they change the history, just like they change their books and they add it to the Torah. So it's really funny to see the situation progressing. For when it comes to the right wing, Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, they have been allied with Netanyahu for the longest time. Netanyahu alone cannot be a prime minister without his alliances with these smaller radical groups. And they've been voicing their plans forever. Nobody has stood in their face. And that tells you that there's a collective agreement over this matter. It's only a matter of theatrics, that some people basically play good cop, bad cop, that they don't want this. But everybody, at the end of the day, when you are a Zionist, you actually agree to occupy somebody else's land and go to the Holy Land, despite the fact that it is against Judaic teachings. That tells you one thing, that they all believe that at one point in time, they will be taking over all these lands. It has been promised to them, as has the rabbis written in their books throughout the past the basic centuries. So for me, the whole Israeli society is a settler society. If you are against those radicals, you wouldn't even be in the Israeli entity in the first place, because that means you are sitting on stolen land.
And that's a great point, Ali, because this move and moves like this, they're paving the way for an end to Palestine. You know, and you still have U.S. and other Western politicians speak of the future of a Palestinian state or a two-state solution, yet they don't condemn the fact that Israel is trying to annex every single square inch of Palestine.
I think all what we hear from the West is a big lie since 1948, and we can say it's like starting by the 1915 Sykes-Picot, and then the 1917 Balfour Promise. They start moving to Palestine and at the time. They were in coordination with some normalization or state of normalization that they declare it now. But since then, like Jordan or Saudi Arabia, they were coordinating with such promise from United Kingdom to establish the Israeli entity. Now we are talking about what's going on in Israel. They're trying to expand and their land. They're trying to change the geography. They're trying to dominate and make, instead of federal countries around, not even they don't accept federal countries surrounding them, but they will go into the confederality in such countries, and they will make it according to Israel as a Jewish state. It will be like they want to do that. But believe me, after the Iranian retaliation and hit, Israel is not secured anymore, and there is no need for proxy, as they used to say. Israel is in very big strategic error living right now by expanding their geography, overwhelmed by they don't have the power to keep it.
Thank you both for joining us in the program. Time has gotten the better of us. Appreciate having you both on. Stay safe. Leila Hatoum, they're joining us from Beirut, and Ali Hamia from Kafr Maliki, both from Lebanon. It just brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for joining us, and bye-bye for now.
The truth. Extreme. The massacres in the Syrian coast. After the armed chaos in Suweida, one question keeps echoing across the fractured landscape of Syria. Has partition become our new painful reality? Let's be clear. Partition is no longer just a foreign think tank fantasy. It's unfolding before our very eyes. In the northeast, the Kurdish-led administration rules its own statelet. In the south, Suweida's Druze community has carved out self-rule after bloody confrontations. And in the coastal regions, the state may wave its flag, but the people are demanding international protection just to survive the chaos. Syria today isn't one nation. It's a patchwork of fears, loyalties, and local warlords. And amid all this fragmentation, Abu Muhammad al-Junani's role stands out like a beacon of betrayal. Yes, Abu Muhammad al-Julani, the so-called jihadi turned moderate, has become the perfect pawn in this ugly game of partition. His militias destabilize from within while claiming to protect the Sunni street. But look deeper and you'll see, Julani is Zionist Israel's gift that keeps on giving. By inflaming sectarian fires, crushing dissent, and spreading chaos in the south, Julani opens the door wide for Zionist dreams of a divided Syria, one too weak to speak of liberating Golan or resistance or even unity. Just look at what's happening in Suweida. After tensions with Bedouin tribes and rising insecurity, Zionist Israel steps in, posing as a protector of Druze. Classic occupation playbook: create chaos, offer fake salvation, and carve a buffer zone to your own liking. Meanwhile, Damascus talks about unity, but actions tell a different story. Sectarian narratives are left unchecked. Regional warlords run the show, and the state seems more interested in managing crises than actually ending them. If Syrians don't reclaim the wheel, foreign hands will drive the car, and they're steering it straight into partition. But here's the hope. This isn't the first time colonial powers tried to slice Syria into sectarian cantons, and it didn't work then. So the question isn't, is partition happening? It is. The real question is, will the next map of Syria be drawn not in Damascus, but in Tel Aviv? Wake up, Syria, before the map forgets you. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. After years of war and foreign meddling, Syria stands at a dangerous crossroads, its unity threatened not just by outside powers, but by those within who serve foreign agendas. In this segment, we uncover how Julani's grip on power and Zionist Israel's calculated interventions are carving out Syria's partition in real time. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Ms. Vanessa Bealey, independent journalist. Pleasure having you with us, Vanessa, to talk about the horrors that we are witnessing at the moment in Syria. How can we really interpret what Abu Muhammad al-Julani is repeating, his repeated assurances that the so-called authorities, we're not seeing authorities, but he calls them authorities, with that they will halt the offensive against Suweida, when we see tribal factions or others who claim that they are tribes on the ground openly defy his open claims and vow to press on, even threatening massacres to seize the city? Is this a sign of his implicit complicity, or does it expose the full descent of Syria into fragmented chaos beyond his control?
I think for certain this demonstrates his complicity with the Zionist entity, because actually what we're seeing are Zionist tactics, just as we saw in the massacres in Sabra and Shatila in the 80s. We're seeing basically Julani, after his meeting with the Israeli representative in Baku, Azerbaijan, and previously his conversations with Israeli officials, We're seeing basically Jolani using the tribal factions as a proxy to carry out the massacre of the Druze in all of Sweda on behalf of Israel, while claiming plausible deniability and standing back, but actually allowing these tribal factions to enter and carry out the massacres of the Druze.
Mm-hmm. So it is you're saying that it is part of a mapped out plan that happened in Baku between him and the Zionist entity, yet he receives certain, if you will, green cards or carte blanche from Western complicit states to continue what he's doing. I mean, we hear them saying that they're concerned, but they're not doing anything. I mean, remember what they did for 14 years in Syria?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, they're concerned about Gaza. They're concerned about Iran, but they stand back when Israel commits genocide or aggression against a sovereign country, because this is part of their agenda. And at the end of the day, everything that Jolani does and says is orchestrated by MI6 and Mossad, Turkish intelligence, and the CIA. Trump sees everything through an Israeli lens. So therefore, everything that Jolani is being given a green light to do is on behalf of the so-called security of the Zionist entity. You can't divorce the two. Jolani's speeches are written by MI6 operatives that are known to be working closely with him in Damascus. So therefore, he's nothing more than a proxy himself who is being directed to carry out the long-term agenda of the West, the GCC, and Israel.
Well, Vanessa, you say that Zionist Israel is exploiting, actually it has mapped out this offensive against the Druze, and it's exploiting the crisis in Sweda to push the region toward full separation from Syria and eventually dependence on Israeli entity, so-called protection. How is Zionist Israel really doing it on the ground? And if we want to tell the people how Israel is doing it and what amount of land in the take and what will happen to the Druze after that, how could you explain that?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that the Druze is not some homogenous faction. There are people who are aligned with Israel. There are some like Al-Balus, who's aligned with Jolani. But the huge majority of Druze are against both Jolani and Israel. Mm-hmm. And they have refused to disarm, which is largely also why the massacres are so brutal, because the Druze are actually resisting and fighting to maintain their dignity, their territory, and Syrian territorial integrity. When I speak to Druze that are fighting inside Sweda and in the countryside. So I think what is important to understand is that Israel is exploiting this as some kind of humanitarian crisis that only Israel can solve, with the use of the factions that are pro-Israel, both in Syria, in Lebanon, and in Israel. Mm-hmm. And the intention, of course, is to ethnically cleanse the Druze that are against the Israeli occupation as far as possible, and then to create the situation which is so miserable for the Druze that they accept any occupation other than Jolani. And this, of course, is what we have seen previously with Jolani's massacres on the coast, where the coastal minority sects are calling for international intervention to prevent the horrors that they're living through. And of course, this means further partitioning of Syria.
Mm-hmm. There's one particular video that I was watching also, because mainstream media is always showing that the Druze are actually on the side of Israel, or they want Israel to enter and protect them. But I saw a very particular video by a Druze sheikh from the occupied Syrian Golan Heights, actually making a very obvious statement and saying Zionist Israel is not here to protect anyone. It cannot even protect the people that it should be supposedly protected under their own law. So it's not here to protect. It's here to take the resources. It's here to occupy. We will stand together as one community. This is not being projected or even just reported by Western media, even a lot of the Arab media as well. Why is that?
Oh, I think there is a concerted effort right now to effectively demonize any elements of resistance within Syria. I'm seeing a lot of commentary on social media saying that basically all Syrian Sunni are takfiri, blaming the Druze for aligning with Israel, as you said, making that very much a majority narrative, which it definitely isn't. When I'm speaking to friends in Sweden, they're telling me, Vanessa, we're defending Syria here, we're defending our country, our earth, our soil, our community. We know what Israel is doing, but equally they have a very pragmatic view that this is going to be strategically a very long war. So we may see moves made by the Druze community to effectively preserve them for now, mm-hmm. while maintaining the resistance in the future. But for me, the Druze represent the majority of Syrians in their resistance against what is a known enemy for the majority of Syrians for decades, mm-hmm. which is the Zionist entity, mm-hmm. and the Takfiri project, which for them is not even Syrian. It doesn't represent Syrian, even Sunni ideology. It doesn't represent Syria, which has always been such a diverse, pluralist society.
It is obvious because a majority of the factions are not even Syrian to begin. They're not even Arab to begin with.
Yeah.
But with various regions operating under de facto autonomous rule inside of Syria, and you see Damascus struggling to reassert centralized control even within Damascus itself, is the disintegration of Syria's national identity now just institutionalized? And what if anything, can reverse this trajectory before it solidifies into permanent partition? Is this the end of the Syria that we know?
I don't think so, because actually the more that the imperialist Zionist bloc overextends itself, the more they put themselves at risk of a resistance forming inside Syria. I know from people I've been speaking to, for example, over the Palestine issue, there have been conversations across Syria about the fact that there are plans to potentially force Palestinians to leave Palestine and go into Syria. People still understand that this means the end of the Palestinian cause. So people now, the chatter on the ground beneath the radar is very much reasserting the Syrian identity. And I think, as I said, the further that Israel pushes this, the further that Jolani pushes the atrocities, either by proxy or directly through his own ISIS, Al-Qaeda forces, the greater will be the pulling together of the Syrian people under their national identity.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you very much, Ms. Vanessa Bili, independent journalist, for being with us to explain what is really going on the ground, because all that we hear from mainstream media is blabber that means absolutely nothing, especially that does not represent what the Syrians really want, which is defending their unity and their country. Thank you very much, Vanessa, for being with us. Ladies and gents, stay tuned, because next we are going to talk how the Soweda crisis is being exploited by Zionist Israel.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Syria's Soweda governorate is collapsing under a devastating humanitarian crisis, one Zionist Israel is exploiting to extend its occupation and its control. Tonight we examine how these tragic events are being manipulated to fracture Syria further, deepen foreign domination, and fuel sectarian division. More details in the following report.
Soweda, a governorate in southern Syria, is witnessing a devastating humanitarian collapse. With water almost completely cut off and severe shortages of food and medicine, residents are teetering on the edge of catastrophe. Calls for an urgent humanitarian corridor are growing louder by the day as the situation becomes increasingly unlivable. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights describes conditions in Soweda as unbearable, with basic services having all but vanished. Yet as local communities struggle to survive, Zionist Israel has stepped in, not to resolve the crisis, but to exploit it. Israeli entity Foreign Minister Gedeon Sa'ar announced a $700,000 aid package to the Druze community, branding it a humanitarian gesture. Mind you, they're still killing people in Gaza. But critics argue this move aligns with a deeper strategy, using humanitarian crises to fuel long-term political and territorial ambitions. This fits a familiar Israeli entity pattern, leveraging sectarian conflict and civil breakdown to entrench control. With Syria fractured and its southern front destabilized, Zionist Israel seeks to expand its grip on the occupied Golan Heights and southern Syria under the guise of aid diplomacy. Now, Abu Muhammad al-Julani, for his part, blames armed Druze factions for violating a ceasefire agreement and committing violent acts that threaten civil peace. At the same time, the Interior Ministry denies reports of recent troop redeployments, even as clashes between Druze and Bedouin fighters continue. The resulting power vacuum has led to mass displacement, particularly among Bedouin populations. Groups calling themselves the Bedouin clans claim to have retaken several villages, underscoring the erosion of central authority. This chaos is precisely the environment Zionist Israel thrives in, stepping in as the protector of minorities while quietly pursuing geopolitical gain. This strategy echoes Zionist Israel's wider regional conduct, a sustained policy of occupation, resource extraction, and the imposition of siege and starvation on Palestinian populations in Gaza. While Zionist Israel openly commits to humanitarian aid in places like Suwayda, it simultaneously maintains a blockade that perpetuates genocide and deprivation in Gaza. The manipulation of Syria's internal crises is not just a matter of territorial ambition. It is a calculated effort to reshape the country's social fabric, weaken its sovereignty, and ensure long-term control over its land and resources. As Suwayda's people suffer, the world must see through the illusion of humanitarian concern and confront the deeper reality. A calculated effort to fracture Syria and undermine its sovereignty under the banner of compassion.
To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert in Zionist affairs. Thank you for being with us, Hassan. Now, how does Zionist Israel's delivery of humanitarian aid to Suwayda function as a strategic tool to legitimize its growing military and political presence in southern Syria? And what implications does this have for Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity?
There is no doubt that the Zionist side is attempting to exploit the newly emerging situation of internal fighting in southern Syria, particularly in the Suwayda region, by portraying its involvement as driven by humanitarian motives and a desire to protect the Druze community, which is under attack and facing atrocities and massacres. The Israeli entity seeks to capitalize on this narrative to market itself as a defender of civilians, presenting its actions as efforts to rescue those allegedly facing genocide. It is a blatant attempt to whitewash the atrocities and genocidal war it continues to commit in Gaza by projecting an image of moral concern elsewhere. The occupation is clearly benefiting from this cover, distributing limited humanitarian aid to bolster this facade of benevolence and concern for those being attacked by Takfiri militants. But the core issue at play here is not humanitarian. It is security and strategic interest. The Zionist entity is aiming to carve out a foothold in Syrian territory and position itself as a decisive player in shaping Syria's future. There is no doubt that Zionist Israel has a vested interest in sowing division within Syria, weakening the central state, and securing a strategic presence that would turn parts of Syria into zones under direct Israeli influence. This aligns with its broader ambitions of regional hegemony, using this conflict as a pretext to impose itself as a key power broker and redraw regional equations, including vis-a-vis Turkey, all under the guise of humanitarian intervention. Its involvement has extended far beyond southern Syria, reaching Damascus itself, where it has struck the General Staff headquarters and one of the Syrian presidential buildings. These actions are clear indicators of the depth of Israeli interference under the banner of humanitarian concern, while in reality pursuing strategic and security objectives.
But Mr. Hassan, in what ways do you think that Abu Muhammad al-Julani's reported cooperation with Zionist Israeli officials be influencing the chaos in Suwayda? And how does his role facilitate Israeli entity objectives of destabilizing Syria from within?
There is no doubt that the persona of Abu Muhammad al-Julani glossed up by American and Shmedia, did not emerge in a vacuum. This man was groomed to play a meticulously defined role within Syria, especially as his entry coincided with the Western orchestrated campaign to dismantle the previous Syrian state structure. The level of attention and support directed toward his rise speaks volumes. Julani's role was never incidental. It was tied to deeper geopolitical objectives that he was tasked with executing inside Syria. Reports have surfaced of documented meetings between Julani's envoys and Israeli officials, both in Abu Dhabi and Azerbaijan. These meetings laid the groundwork for a framework of coordination that, in effect, resembled a security pact with overlapping strategic objectives. The intention was clear. The ongoing coordination and communication raised serious and fundamental questions, particularly regarding the southern front in Syria and how far this collaboration is designed to serve the interests of the Israeli occupation and undermine Syrian stability. Israeli entity interference, particularly via figures like Julani, contributes directly to fragmenting Syria, pushing it further into the status of a failed state and eroding its potential for recovery and resurgence. These destructive goals serve none other than the Zionist project, which has always feared the emergence of a stable, capable, and sovereign Syria on its northern and eastern borders. Any partnership between Zionist Israel and proxy actors like Julani inevitably undermines Syrian national unity and cripples the state's institutional capacity. Furthermore, recent analysis suggests that despite its vocal posturing in defense of the Druze community, the Israeli entity ultimately backed away from action, leaving Julani's forces and tribal militias to advance towards Sweida. This strategic retreat reveals that Zionist Israel was never truly committed to protecting the Druze. Instead, it appears to have been operating within the bounds of its broader coordination with the Americans.
Well, considering Zionist Israel's long-standing policies of occupation and resource exploitation across the region, especially recently in Syria, how does its approach in Sweida in particular fit into its broader strategy, specifically when juxtaposed with its ongoing siege and humanitarian assault on Gaza, which has peaked as we speak?
There's no doubt that the Zionist entity calculated early on how to exploit the crisis in Syria to its advantage. From the very first days following the collapse of the state structure in Syria, the Zionist regime launched a military campaign aimed at destroying the Syrian army's capabilities. It then widened its intervention in southern Syria under a strategy cloaked in humanitarian pretexts, claiming to protect the Druze minority in the south and portraying itself as their savior. The Israeli occupation framed its involvement as a moral duty, emphasizing family ties between Druze in southern Syria and those within the occupied territories, some of whom serve in the Zionist Israeli army. It claimed to be acting out of loyalty to what it called a blood alliance with the Druze community in the Galilee region of northern occupied Palestine. This entire narrative reeks of hypocrisy. While the occupation projects itself as a compassionate force tending to Syria's wounds and defending civilians from so-called extremist militias, now branded by some as Syrian security forces, it simultaneously commits unspeakable atrocities. From relentless bombings of civilians in their homes and tents in Gaza, to executing Palestinians seeking humanitarian aid in U.S.-designated zones, Israel continues to perpetuate the massacres under the cover of silence. To then attempt to rehabilitate its image by distributing a few humanitarian boxes in Syria is an insult to truth and justice. It exposes the glaring contradiction between Israel's actions and its propaganda. The regime doesn't care about human rights, merely pursues its own security agenda and regional dominance. The humanitarian concern is nothing more than a mask to obscure its true intentions: control, exploitation, and occupation.
I have one more question before we leave you, Mr. Hassan. It's before trying to show themselves as protectors of the Sueda community, Zionist Israel aggressively occupied large swaths of land in Syria that are not within the Druze community, that are in the Mount Hermon, or what's known as Jabal al-Shayh, taking those points, claiming that they're taking those hilltops and mountains to protect Zionist Israel. And now they're saying they want to protect the Sueda community and protect also Zionist Israel from having a border with what they call as jihadi takfiris. But what international law allows Zionist Israel to continue to do this? And are they really complicit in what's happening right now also? As they are in Gaza, they are so in Syria?
Under the unwavering American support and protection, the Israeli occupation acts with total impunity. Even within the Israeli entity narrative, some U.S. officials have been described as behaving irrationally, striking targets without grasping the consequences. While the U.S. occasionally attempts to distance itself from some of the occupation's reckless actions, the reality remains. It is American cover that empowers Zionist Israel to act with unchecked aggression across multiple arenas. This carte blanche has emboldened the Israeli entity to operate as if it were above international law, free to violate every norm and red line without fear of accountability. It is precisely this backing that allowed Israel to intervene in the Syrian theater following the collapse of the previous regime, seizing vast swaths of territory under flimsy pretexts such as border security. But today, there is no credible threat to Israeli entity security emanating from Syria. Even Netanyahu admits Israel has successfully pushed Iran and its allies out of the area, calling it a strategic achievement. If that is true, then what justifies continued Israeli entity operations in Syria? The answer is not security. It is imperial ambition, an attempt to dominate and expand influence, fueled by Zionist Israel's sense of regional superiority and a surplus of unrestrained power granted by its American sponsors.
I want to thank you very much, Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert in Zionist affairs, for contributing to our show and showing us really what Zionist Israel wants from showing itself or performing the role of protector for the Druze community, which is a lie and a base for occupation. Ladies and gents, thank you. Please do follow us to get more updates about the region of West Asia right here on the Mideast Stream. Assalamu alaikum.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim Rabbi arini kayfa tuhyil mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah, and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
Welcome once again, dear listeners. Let's take a look at what's coming up your way in the next hour. We begin with the latest news. Stay informed with the top headlines and major developments from across the globe. Following the news, immerse yourself in the ocean of dua with Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi. This reflective program explores the rich spiritual traditions of Islamic supplications and ziyarat, drawing from revered collections such as Mafatih al-Jinan. Each episode features insightful commentary on selected prayers, including Dua-i-Kumail, Munajat Shabaniya, Dua Abu Hamza Sumayya,